Welcome to the SpursDynasty.com podcast.
I'm Trace Ronning. My guest host tonight is the Twitter famous Stephen Hale. He once tweeted at Chandler Parsons about making fun of him breaking his hand, and I think it got over 300 likes. Is that right?
Oh, man, you brought a throwback. Yes, that's correct. That was, I think, Trace, that was my best tweet ever. And for a guy with less than 1,000 followers to get that kind of traction at the expense of Chandler Parsons, I mean, what else is there to live for, bro?
It's a win-win situation. I think he even liked it himself. Was that right?
Yeah, he did. What sparked that to be your introduction here, Trace? Because that was, I'm pretty sure that was the summer of, that was EmojiCon. So whenever all the Chris Paul and stuff happened.
That was the summer of that. And all that. Yeah.
And that was like 2 years ago. So was that just sitting in the old memory bank for you, bud?
I was just thinking, you know, it was my first time to introduce you on the podcast, and I thought I really had to bring something special out. And for some reason, I remembered that. I don't know. So
picked a good one.
That's at the Hailstone for Stephen. And if you want to follow me and the dumb things I post, including horse facts and Spurs random knowledge, is at Dinner Dog. So let's talk about the Spurs, since that's what we're actually here to do. As you know, the Spurs are now only down 3-1 in this best of seven series behind a really fun game four. But before we get to game four, game three, it's kind of more the same of games one and two. You know, Spurs kind of hung in there as long as they could. And then about midway through the third quarter, it just became obvious that, Klay Thompson was going to continue shooting 90%, and the Spurs didn't have an answer. But even was there anything in game three that you saw the Spurs do to spark their game four victory, or do you think that was just pure pride and guts taking over with their possible last home game ever for Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker?
Sure. Well, I want to start off, Trace, by just saying on a serious note real quick that we want to extend our best wishes to the Popovich family as they go through their this difficult time with their loss right now. And the same is also true of the Laverne family, who was out this past week dealing with a loss as well. So been obviously a tough season, and now the real issues of life, bigger than basketball, have kind of hit the Spurs family. And I wrote a piece about it today on SpursDynasty.com, kind of putting some thoughts out there for the Popovich family. But best wishes to them as they try and deal with this difficult time. But that being said, man, game three was kind of that was a frustrating game to watch. It was frustrating because obviously Spurs Nation was dealing with, the loss of what happened with the Popovich family, Coach Pop's wife passing. And I felt like it was just this dark emotional cloud that kind of hung over the city, kind of hung over the entire organization, and definitely trickled down to the players. And you saw kind of, I think Rudy Gay opened the game with an incredible thunderous dunk on JaVale McGee. And we kind of thought, oh man, it's about to go down. Like the emotion and the draw of the craziness of the season and the chaos is all going to kind of fuel this fire into the Spurs game three victory, and everything was going to turn around. And they kind of went through the first half and looked like this rejuvenated Spurs team. And then very quickly in the second half, Klay Thompson turned into Klay Thompson. Kevin Durant turned into Kevin Durant. Bryn Forbes did not grow an inch during the second half of game three, and neither did Patty Mills or Tony Parker or any other guard that we tried to throw at those guys. And it was over about as quickly as it began, and the Warriors erased that lead, and they didn't really look back. And I think, Trace, it was kind of odd because we thought that the Spurs were going to have one of those win one for the Gipper moments. And it was a little odd to see it not come to pass. Ironically, that moment came in game four. But game three was just, it was a weird game. I don't know that we can chalk that particular game up to a lot of the talent on the court. I kind of chalk that up to the amount of emotion that was in the arena at that time. And I do think that I feel like the Spurs players and the Spurs fans really wanted a moment to draw off all the negative energy and put that into a Game 3. And they're, you know, Coach Popovich in his own right, he's allowed to do this. It's perfectly within his reason to do it, but he didn't want that moment. You know, he didn't want there to be any draw or a focus on him while he was away. He wanted it on the team, and that's incredible humility for Coach Pop. And I respect that entirely, but I do think that it felt like the players and the organization, the fan base, really wanted to draw from that energy in Game 3, and they didn't get a chance to do that. And the result was another heartbreaking loss, Trey.
Yeah, you know, I felt, you know, there were a lot of moments in the first half of that game where the Spurs would get a little bit of a lead, and then they'd miss some open shots or something. And the whole thing about playing the Warriors is like, you got to go into halftime up by like 15 points to feel halfway comfortable about your odds of winning. You know, it still feels like you're losing a little bit, even when you're up by double digits. Like, so the Spurs never really were able to put together a run that like would have made, that would have, I don't know, demoralized anyone on the Warriors bench. You know what I mean? There was no moment where it was like, oh, you know, we can't come back from this. It's like, no, we still have Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson over here. Like, and those guys, they'll just combine for another 60 points and we'll be fine. We'll get out of here. JaVale McGee will somehow toss in 12 and you know, good night. And so the great thing about Game 4, if I can, you know, segue into that, was that the Spurs were, you know, they were able to do that. You know, the whole series, like you noticed this, is, you know, we mentioned it a second ago, but like the third quarter has been killing the Spurs. Like they've always been close at halftime, and then the third quarter, it's like the Spurs get a little bit of rest, and they somehow don't know how to like use the fact that they got 20 minutes of rest to their advantage and play a spirited third quarter, whereas Golden State is just like rearing to come out of the gate, and so.
Yep.
And that happened in Game 4 too. You know, the Spurs had a 14-point lead at halftime, and Warriors had cut that down to 6 by the time the third quarter was over. But, you know, someone out there, the hero that we have, the hero that we deserve, the hero that is San Antonio City's greatest, not masked man, I don't know, it's pretty obvious who he is. It's Manu Ginobili, man. The fourth quarter was just Manu time. And for me, I thought that was really special to see. You know, Manu obviously knows, maybe he doesn't know what he's going to do this offseason, but it certainly looked like he was a man who was out to, you know, show the city of San Antonio, you know, his appreciation for all the years of support and, you know, what playing basketball for San Antonio has meant for him. And he did not want to lose his last game on the court of the AT&T Center. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you just said that he's the hero we deserve. I kind of feel like I don't know that anybody really deserves Manu. I mean, the heart and soul that he's given to not just the franchise, but the city of San Antonio in general, and the way that he's lifted them over the years. Of course, he's had his moments that have been, you know. When I think about the worst Manu moment, I think of that Dirk Nowitzki foul back in whatever it was, 2006.
Yeah. We could have three-peated 05 to 07. Yeah.
Yeah. But because of moments like what happened in Game 4, that's what covers all the other 2006 stuff with the Mavs. He was magnificent, Trace. And the magnificent part about it is not just what he did as a player on a court in a basketball game, but this guy is 40 years old. He turns 41 this summer, I think in July, and he's still highly productive at 40. Like, he's not like a Vince Carter playing on the Sacramento Kings, you know, 40. He's Manu Ginobili in the playoffs against the Warriors in an elimination game on the road, you know, at home. I almost said on the road, at home in front of his home crowd, but also meeting that team at the moment where they needed him the most. I mean, we're talking about a team that for all intents and purposes this year has been through hell on the court and off the court. They've had, you know, all kinds of drama with the Kawhi situation. There's been issues with these cornerstone pieces like Kyle Anderson, who's been up and down. You know, you've had LaMarcus Aldridge has had a great year, but he's been, you know, virtually non-existent in a lot of ways in the first three games. Tony Parker's been rubbish all year long. And then now you're going through this chaos with these, you know, with this loss of your head coach and his wife. And so the coach is gone and the city is looking for a hero in that moment. And the most likely candidate is rehabbing at a NBA facility in New York City. And enter Manu Ginobili, and he pulls this magic out of this hat. And I just think, Trace, that Manu was the only person that really understood the magnitude of that game, like the importance of it as an organization and what the city needed and what, you know, the fans and what the team needed. You know, he grasped the fullness of that game, playing the Golden State Warriors. You're about to get swept off your floor, and Manu says, "This is not how it ends. I'm not going out this way. I'm not losing this way." And there, you could see in his face, Trace, it was almost eerie. Like he was not going to let them lose that game. And I don't know if Manu has any other games in him like that. And I don't know if he's had one in a while, but that was the ultimate fierce competitor that we saw. And he was not going to lose that game, man. And it was, I think it goes down. I think that game four at 40 years old, Trace, it's got to be in the top three great Manu moments of all time.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm gonna take umbrage with one thing you said about LaMarcus Aldridge and his disappearing act, if I may.
Yeah,
he had an incredible game, too. I'll give you game one because, to be honest, I don't think nobody showed up for game one on the San Antonio side. But LaMarcus Aldridge dropped 34 with 12 rebounds and he hit all 12 of his free throws in game two. He came to play. He came to play. Manu, what did Manu do in game one? I got it right here. I mean, he had 10. You know, he was standard Manu.
Yeah, he's still getting some.
He wasn't quite in desperation mode yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if I can, you know, echo anything more you said about Manu Ginobili, but I will add, Parker, if anyone, Tony Parker has been pretty absent from this series in part because he just doesn't get minutes anymore. But in game four, he had a pretty solid run, man. He showed a few of those moves he used to do like 10 years ago under the rim and got some pretty slick layups. And unfortunately, the team was a -8 while he was on the court. But, for once this season, I don't think that was Tony Parker's fault.
No, it wasn't. Parker had some good minutes in game three as well. There was a moment where, you know, I think he rattled off like 10 in the third quarter or something to that effect. And he was looking good. But he didn't ever have that killer instinct that Manu did. And the other impact that Manu makes on this team is when Manu is like that, it's contagious. You start seeing LaMarcus Aldridge bank in threes as the shot clock is expiring, right? You start seeing Patty Mills, you know, coming off screens a little bit more comfortably. You see Danny Green getting to the ball a little bit more. Like it's contagious, man. And the Spurs team fed off of his energy and they looked, Trace, last night in game four, they looked like a playoff team. Like they looked good, man. And I know that they've been up and down and, you know, they're certainly not as good as the Warriors, but they could have beat a lot of teams last night in that game. It wasn't just the Warriors that they could have beat. They can't maintain that for a 7-game series, but they looked good, man.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I want to point out is that in game four, San Antonio shot 54% from three, which is like, hey guys, we finally figured out what the rest of the league is doing and decided that we're going to shoot and make some threes. I mean, can we talk about DeJounte Murray making three out of his four
awesome
shots from behind the arc.
Awesome.
That was the only four he's taken in the whole series. I mean, I know, and he was wide open for I don't know, at least one or two of them. But that's what they're going to give you. That's what you got to start making. So I mean, game four was just really cool. On so many levels, you get to see Parker and Ginobili in possibly their last home game, just really, really showing up. You get to see DeJounte Murray, who is hopefully our future point guard. Mm-hmm. Learning how to make a three and doing all the same stuff that we've come to really appreciate from him in terms of like rebounds and just kind of he's not always in the right place at the right time, but he's getting there. He's learning how
sure.
to I don't know he's got like his Manu instincts growing on him or whatever. So that was really cool. And he's 20. I couldn't even buy him a beer if I wanted to celebrate with him.
Yeah. I mean, he's hitting those shots in a game four in an elimination game in the playoffs. That's big time, because you look at the other side of that and Kyle Anderson wasn't hitting those shots. I wonder if Kyle Anderson shot himself out of a contract this off summer just by the fact that he can't stay on the court because he can't shoot the ball. And Murray gets out there, strokes three in a row, and is looking like, man, I think Mike Finger said it from the San Antonio Express News, that DeJounte Murray with a consistent jump shot and a consistent three ball, he's an all-star in the Western Conference. And that's a pretty bold prediction, but he's got so many other aspects of his game, Trace. With all the question marks that loom ahead, Spurs fans should be really excited about their future with their point guard, because I think Murray's going to end up being special. I was really impressed with him last night.
Yeah, me too. And then, I don't know, I saw this morning and when I jumped onto the old Twitter.com that DeJounte Murray was spotted not 6 hours after the game had ended back in the gym working on his jump shot, which is
that's awesome, man.
Impressive. I would have been at home eating several sandwiches. So good on you,
yeah.
DeJounte Murray, for working on your game. There's one other thing I want to touch on in game four real quick, and a little bit mm-hmm. of a pet peeve of yours, I think. San Antonio, before the game, put out a bunch of shirts on everyone's seat, the black shirts that
shirt.
Said, go Spurs, go. And yeah. I did notice that tonight in the Utah game, they're all wearing white shirts that were put out on their seats. But you noticed the other day that it seemed like there was hardly anyone in San Antonio wearing those shirts that they put out on the seats. So, they didn't get the blackout effect that they were looking for. And I was just wondering if you could talk me through your distaste of not wearing your free Spurs t-shirt at the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, a couple of thoughts on that. The first off is, man, was that Utah arena rocking or what, man? I mean, they were crazy, bro. That is awesome. They don't even hardly sit down. It's like watching a high school basketball game, man. That would be really cool if Spurs fans would do that. And I know, man, you're up in Seattle and I'm out here in Southern California, so we don't get to go to the AT&T Center very much. We have to watch on TV, and that leaves us to just sit and pass judgment a lot. But for a playoff game, man, when they put shirts on your chair, like, put the shirt on. Number one, it's a free shirt. Like, you bought the ticket, put the shirt on and wear it for 40, for 2 hours, whatever the time limit is, and then take it off later. But people are like, oh, it's not the right size. They put all extra larges out. Like, I mean, the t-shirt thing is kind of lame anyways. Like, I would like to see them do, like I think I said today, like throw out a Fiesta colored, like snapback hat and let everybody wear that. And but it doesn't have the same effect as whenever you have the potential to be like a blackout. Like, and that's what's cool is the Spurs colorway. Put the black shirts on and do that and get involved. And I felt like, obviously we talked about game three and the emotion of that, but man, like get behind this team. And I think Spurs fans this year have been so off the rails, Trace. Like, what are we doing, man? Like, the commentary that's gone on about the Kawhi Leonard situation, the commentary about the Pau Gasol, Patty Mills contracts, and, you know, you've got a half the fan base that is loyal to the history. They're like, Tony, Manu, Tim, Popovich, don't ever say anything negative. And you got this other new wave that's like all in on Kawhi and DeJounte Murray and these younger guys. And of course, there's a Derek White movement that's going on that I'm really not on that train yet. But nope. You kind of just, you just kind of see where, like, I don't know. Are Spurs fans like disinterested? Have they already like punted on the season? Like, Spurs fans are supposed to be the most loyal fan base in all of sports, right? You know, we're always pulling for the guys, even if we know we're not going to win, right? Like, we're always like, that's what makes us Spurs fans. There's not a Major League Baseball team in San Antonio. There's not an NFL team. Like, it's the Spurs. And so it's really weird to see a playoff game and see like the promo photo on Instagram or on Twitter where the Spurs have laid out the, you know, the shirts on the seats and they're like 3 hours to tip off or whatever. And then you see tip off and all you see is like your traditional sea of like flannel shirts and a couple like David Robinson jerseys from guys who are too fat and don't wear the undershirt. They just wear like the straight jersey. And you know, you just see like, you see all this weird nonsense in the stands.
The true fan.
That's the true fan. The guy that wears the David Robinson jersey and he's like a little bit overweight, but he doesn't have on an undershirt under it. Like, that guy's a hero. But man, I just want to say, like, put on a shirt. If you have a ticket to a playoff game and there's a shirt on your seat, put on the shirt. We should make a hashtag out of it and get it trending or something. Put on the shirt, Trace.
So, I mean, I get it, and I ultimately think that if I was at the game, I would put on the shirt. But I also, you know, mm-hmm. I also understand that, you know, you spend some good money on NBA jerseys or, you know, whatever, and, you know, maybe you wanna wear your Manu Ginobili Argentina jersey. You know, it's gonna be the last time
you see
Manu playing for the Spurs possibly, and you wanna, you know, there's those guys that they wear their Argentina stuff every time no matter what,
mm-hmm.
and that's cool. And, but, you know, I didn't get it. And I can sit over here and complain about t-shirts that don't fit, like, whatever. But I don't know. I'm not going to knock anyone for like not wanting to wear this shirt that they didn't know they were going to get. I don't know. I don't have enough energy to passionately argue one side or the other, but I would.
Well, I don't need your logic on this podcast. Okay. Just because you're going to be rational and stuff, like, that doesn't do me any favors.
Well, you know, man, it's kind of funny. I went to, I live in Seattle, and I went to a Mariners A's game last weekend just because, and I ended up sitting in this section where they give you a free t-shirt with Felix Hernandez's face on. He's the guy that's pitching that day, and they actually, like, mm-hmm. you actually, like, have to go into, like, the special area to get your shirt, and they, like, scan your ticket, and you get to, like, pick a size. And so I was like, oh, wow, I can actually take a medium. And so I went and I sat down in my seat, and I sat it down on the backrest, and I just left it there the entire game, and I didn't even wear it. So I don't know. But, like, but at the same time, like, I'm not a Mariners. Like, I was just there because I wanted to go to a baseball game. You know, I love the Mariners or anything. Yeah, you know, it's cool. It's a nice shirt. Like, maybe I'll wear it next time I go to the game, and it's, like, warm enough to not wear a jacket. I don't know. Anyway,
well,
sorry. I don't want to waste any more time talking about baseball.
Yeah, I'll stop acting like Mike Taylor over here, you know, yelling at everybody.
That's right.
By the way, if you guys listen to Mike Taylor, that guy's crazy. So stay away from Mike Taylor.
You heard it right here. And speaking of Mike Taylor,
Game 5?
Yeah, well, you know, that was my segue there. Game 5, I expect games 1 through 3 to happen in game 5, if I'm being quite honest.
Yeah.
And it would be awesome if San Antonio can carry over what they did in game 4. And Messina's coaching again. I don't know if you saw that, but Popovich is. I don't think Pop comes back if this thing goes to 7, and that's fine. But maybe Messina, you know, sparks something in them, and they go to Oakland tomorrow night and just. I guess tonight, if you're listening to it now, it's tonight. And you know, they pull off a great upset and they go home and maybe we get another really special Manu game. I almost want them to lose game 5 because I don't know if they can, like, pull off a game six win with everything against them. But here's an interesting theory that I don't know how many legs this has. It's just something I briefly saw and thought a little about earlier. But you know, with the Portland and Pelicans series just being over before it even started, which is crazy. Sub note, like, I did not expect the Pelicans to sweep that at all. But
no.
Do you think that the Warriors would like let this go to six or seven games just to be more prepared with Steph Curry for the second round?
You know, that's an interesting take on this, Trace, because I would say that no, like no team ever wants to lose unless you're the Phoenix Suns or the Orlando Magic or the half the other teams that are down at the bottom of the barrel. And that's the point, sure. Right? People always like, no, you never want to lose. But tanking in general has become a strategy in a lot of ways. And I totally buy into the fact that Golden State knows that they're better than the Spurs, and they probably don't want to find themselves in a game seven where they're going, okay, let's win a game seven, because in that situation, like anything can happen. And I totally get that. So they definitely would want to wrap it up prior to a game seven, but Steve Kerr knows that the Spurs were going to rally and win one of those two games in San Antonio, game three or a game four. He knows like the emotion behind the Popovich loss and all this kind of stuff. It was going to happen. And I can totally see Steve Kerr and the Warriors in their arrogance going, hey guys, like go out there and play in game five. And you know, let's see what happens. And maybe we're up by 15, you know, midway through the third quarter or something like that, and then we coast. But if it's close, like, don't worry about it, guys. Like, if they have a lead going into the fourth quarter, I wouldn't be surprised if Golden State pumps the brakes and lets that game slide. And I think it's an arrogant way for a good team to tank a little bit in the playoffs so that they can work out some of their kinks. They get an extra game of scrimmage time so that they can maybe you bring Steph back in game six or game seven and you let him get a couple reps, you know, with the team against some competition. Maybe they experiment a little bit more with some matchups, you know, that they can try out. They know that they can beat the Spurs. So it's interesting. It is. I don't think that the Spurs can necessarily win three in a row, but maybe Golden State does get a little bored in game five. Maybe you come home for a game six. Anything can happen. I mean, but the realistic scenario is that Golden State just comes out firing and they mop the floor with the Spurs in game five, and it's never really close. That's what I think is a more likely scenario, but it's an interesting theory.
Yeah, you know, I from my point of view, I'm on the same side as you. And to be honest, I don't think this Golden State team is going to have a problem with the Pelicans, even if they don't get Steph Curry back for like the first two games.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll have more of a problem with the Pelicans than they did with the Spurs, because there's no one on earth right now that can stop Anthony Davis, apparently. But It's the same, you know, it's the same problem San Antonio has. Even when they had Kawhi Leonard, it was like, sure, you can, you know, Kawhi can score 30 points a game if he has to, but he can't score the 30 points that Steph is going to score, the 30 points that Klay is going to score, and then the 30 points that Durant's going to score. So eventually, there's almost no one in the league, as far as I can see, that can just match up with the pure talent that Golden State has amassed. And so other teams might be able to team better against Golden State and kind of take advantage of some of their weaknesses. But, you know, San Antonio doesn't have that roster. And I don't think, I mean, Drew Holiday has been amazing, and, you know, not to take anything away from Drew Holiday, but how many series like that does Drew Holiday have in him? I don't know. Like, the sky's the limit for Anthony Davis. I don't think the sky is the limit for Drew Holiday, but good for him, man. It's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it really has, and I don't know that he can put that together again, but to be honest with you, that's not really our problem. I mean,
no,
Spurs have their
hands full as it is. the PDP or whatever it would be, the Pelicans. Anyway, sorry. So cool. I'll just try. Yeah, I'm going to segue into something else here real quick. So it looks like the Jazz are going to go up 3-1 in this series. You think they close that one out on the road?
Yeah,
in game five.
Man, Melo is bad. Melo is a bad basketball player right now.
Melo,
and here's the crazy part.
Awful.
Trace, they're going to pay him $28 million next year. That's ridiculous. I just can't wrap my head around that. He's not worth. He's about as worth as much as Tony Parker is right now. To be downright honest with you, and I don't know that I'd give Tony Parker any more than $8 million a year. Like, that's what Melo is, and they're going to pay him $28 million a year. That's just nuts. They shouldn't even play the next game. Like, that's how bad that is.
That's right. I like it. And let's see, what's another close one? Ooh, yeah. So two series in the East that I'm kind of interested in. Who do you think is going to come out of the Raptors-Wizards series?
I still think
Toronto wins.
Yeah, I still think it's going to be Toronto. And I haven't watched that series as much as I'd like to, but I really think that John Wall was pretty amazing the other day. But I still think the Raptors are gonna come away with that. But you predicted it on our podcast before we started the playoffs. Dude, what's Indiana doing? I mean, is this really gonna happen, Trace?
Man, I was so disappointed last night that they didn't finish that one. They had a great run, man. Like you said before, it's playoff LeBron, but I don't know, man. I think if Indiana
does Lance Stevenson have his number?
I don't know if Lance Stevenson has his number. He definitely has left several annoying voicemails, but I don't know if he has his. He's calling him collect. I don't know if LeBron's picking up, but he's disrupting. He pissed off Green. That's for sure. He's definitely in Green's head. I think if Indiana wins game five, they take game six and win that one 4-2. But I think if Cleveland wins game five, it's going to be hard for the Pacers to finish it off. But it's been a ton of fun to watch those guys, man. I didn't even know who half of them were before the series started. And nobody knew who Oladipo was before this year. You know, we all knew the name, but he was just kind of a guy that was like hanging out in Orlando. And now all of a sudden,
boy, he's been amazing.
Like,
huh?
Yeah, he's been a lot of fun. So anyway, I think that's gonna do it. That's our quick wrap up of some other interesting series around the league. Steven, thank you as always for chatting with me about the Spurs. Hopefully, this might be the last time we do it before the season ends, but we'll definitely have to keep this going in the off season.
Absolutely, fingers crossed that we talk about a game six, but. We'll be realistic here. Thanks, Trace.
That's right. All right, and thanks, everyone, for listening to the SpursDynasty.com podcast. Remember to follow us for all your Spurs updates, news, hot takes, cold takes, whatever you want. Cool stuff on Twitter. Follow Steven at The Hailstone. You can follow me at Dinna_dog, DINNA_DAWG. And please do not forget to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, rate it, share it with your friends, at least if they're Spurs fans. Don't share it with Rockets fans because they'll probably give us negative ratings for no good reason. No. And they're not going to be interested anyways. So, cool. Thanks again, Steven, and everyone else. Go, Spurs, go.